Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 410.
This week on the podcast, my book is in stores now. You should buy it.
And Hurricane Ida is just the kind of disrespectful hurricane that chose to come in the middle of a pandemic as opposed to literally any other time.
Plus, recall update, idiots abound. Vote no.
And no one wants everyone to be evicted from their homes more than SCOTUS.
Plus, COVID is now a pandemic of the radio hosts.
And infrastructure season. Everybody has claimed victory and yet nobody has won anything yet.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
It's official. My book is in stores. You can buy it on the internet. You can buy it in a bookstore. If your bookstore does not carry it, you can call and harass them and demand that they carry it. You can do any of those things.
I know. I texted you at one point this week and I was like, is there anything in life that could possibly be better than walking into a bookstore and then having your book on display at the bookstore?
I mean, nothing. And yeah. There's nothing worse than walking into a bookstore and not having it on display, which is why everyone should call their local bookstores and demand that they carry Some Kids Left Behind.
Right. Or have your mother do it, right?
Or have your mother do it. If whoever you are, your mother will be on the case. Moms are out there. Aunts and moms are out there doing the work. I just heard that one of my closest friends from home, her mom was in her local Barnes & Noble yelling at them to put my book more prominently displayed there. And that's
amazing.
What we should all be doing. That's take a note.
That's right. Yes.
That's what we should be doing.
But it's
so that's
exciting.
Very exciting. That's right. You can actually like hold it in a tangible form and then purchase it with money, which is,
it's on the shelf behind
it's
me.
On the shelf. Yeah.
On the Zoom, so, which you're not watching because we're probably not going to post the Zoom.
No. But I can see it and I feel excited about it. Also, I'm glad that I chose to have an orange cover because it's very easy to pick out on a bookshelf.
That's what I just said. Like, as soon as I put it on this shelf of books back there, which is a bunch of quality books, like, that's a good shelf back there that has been curated for when we were posting the videos of this podcast specifically. But, like, as soon as I put it there, I was like, boom, pop a color. There's only two books with pops of color over there, and it's yours, and it's Bernie Sanders. Like, go figure.
Yeah.
You two.
Right.
Of course, you two were the two that got the note.
That's right. We're the ones that take notes. If you're
that's right, you're right.
If
next
you're out
to,
there,
you're. I put you right next to the Communist Manifesto. I hope you
I feel good about
that. I thought you would.
I feel great.
Yep, thought you would.
Two incredibly readable books.
That's right.
That anyone would be lucky to get through. Not in the bad way. I just said that the opposite of how I meant it. That anyone would be lucky to have the opportunity to go through.
Right. Yes.
Not that you would be lucky to get through. It's a very readable book. Both are highly readable. Mm-hmm. Speaking of communists, though, you may have heard that Ed Asner died.
Yeah.
And you may have felt sad about that because of all of his time as a character actor that we all loved. But what you may not know about him is that he's a huge socialist.
Right. That's what you're going to only see a bunch of clips from the Mary Tyler Moore Show for the next 24 to 48 hours while they talk about Ed Asner having died. And I get it. Right. It's a big cultural touchstone for us as people in America. But like, no one is going to ever mention that he was a big socialist. So remember that.
That's right.
He's been in DSA since its inception in 1970 and actually like talks very openly about it. He talks about how he wishes that socialism was more accepted in this country. And he has like been like a real labor guy. And he has like fought for better healthcare protections, like in SAG-AFTRA. So he's like really been active in that over the years. But like, he's a real badass, that guy, Ed Asner.
Yeah.
So remember that as they're trying to paint him as just some like, you know,
lovable guy,
which he was certainly, but
sure.
Like nobody's going to tell you he was a socialist. And
the thing
except for us.
That I think a lot of people would have you believe is that you can't be an adorable, lovable person and also a socialist, but that's just not true.
That's right.
Adorable people are socialists left, right, and center. That's happening out there. So anyone that is beloved by all could turn out to be a socialist. That's a risk you're living with in America because that happens all the time.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, who's cuter than I am?
Exactly. As we always say.
Don't answer that.
weather events happening. We're not the Weather Channel. We're not here to tell you news about Hurricane Ida. No. But we are here to tell you that Brent read earlier that the Mississippi River is running backwards, and that doesn't feel right to us.
I took a photograph of it on my television. It was a headline on CNN, and I had it on mute because I was doing something else. And I was like, well, that just feels wrong. And then I didn't unmute it because I kind of almost didn't really want to know.
No, exactly. There are two pieces of news that I got today that made me concerned about nature. One was this. The other was that there's a TikTok going around of a roach flying around like on a napkin as if it's a magic carpet.
Right. To a whole new world.
To a whole new world.
Isn't that from Aladdin?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Both of those made me incredibly unhappy. But only one of them made me chuckle. And that was the roach one. So this Mississippi River one isn't even funny.
No.
And if you're going to have a terrifying nature thing happen, you want it to also be funny. Right. It has to be.
Well, and you also heard about the Tahoe fires also.
I heard about the Tahoe fires also on TikTok because apparently there is so much weather news that you can't actually hear about all of it. So I'm just listening to various people talk on TikTok about how they're preparing for various disasters in various parts of America. All of these are things that I haven't heard about in the actual news until the last minute because I was prepped for Hurricane Ida days ago because people were evacuating on TikTok. I didn't see this make landfall on the front page of the New York Times until today. So if I had not been watching TikTok, I wouldn't have known to be prepared for news later in the week about people having to evacuate in New Orleans.
God, I know.
It's a bad scene out there. And part of that is just because there keep being attacks at the Kabul airport. And that's what's been on the front page of the news.
I know.
And look, are we the people to tell you that story and the details? No, of course not.
No.
We don't know what's going on. What we do know is that Madison Cawthorn tried to get Kamala Harris to invoke the 25th Amendment. And that was funny. So at least there was one thing about this that was hilarious, and it was the idea of anyone who's a Trumper trying to get anyone in the current government to invoke the 25th Amendment over terrorist attacks happening in Kabul.
I mean,
it's just this guy. It's too much. He's too much. Man. He's literally, I feel like being called too much is something that almost always is referring to women. Like people call women too much all the time. But Madison Cawthorn is like the exact, the perfect example of a man who is too much.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of men who are too much. He's not alone in that category.
No.
Rand Paul is too much. Mm-hmm. Marco Rubio is too much. Ted Cruz is much too much. But these people are not getting called too much by society at large enough.
No.
And they are instead being given platforms to profess that they have asked the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment in a completely unrealistic attempt to just grab a headline. And let's remember that these men are too much and that we should not listen to them.
Yeah. One thing I feel like I sort of appreciate about Madison Cawthorn is that it all feels like a bit with him. It's like a real commitment to a bit, I feel like.
I feel to some extent like a lot of people are in this category. Josh Hawley is somebody who I think is just running with a bit. I think the problem with him is that he's not funny. Like Madison Cawthorn is like doing a funny bit. It's a terrifying
right.
bit also. I'm not suggesting it's not a dangerous bit.
So. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, certainly he's not intentionally funny. But like Josh Hawley is doing like an evil dictator bit and Madison Cawthorn is doing kind of like a glumping like Trumper bit. And both of these don't feel like they could be derived from honest positions. But also, I think that the thing that they have in common is not having honest positions. So that is why they're both engaged in bit work, if you will. But I mean, like, Ted Cruz is also doing a bit. Marco Rubio's faux outrage about everything is a bit. All of these people are doing bits, their best at bidding, and not all of them are doing those bits well. But I feel like Madison Cawthorn attempting to have the 25th Amendment invoked is sort of a hilarious version of the bit.
Yeah, it's
and
great.
I will allow that.
It's the same.
That's
yeah.
Look, some things I don't want to allow include the California recall and any further discussion about it. Here's the thing. Just definitely vote in it and vote no. And honestly, we don't really care what you do on the second question. I'm not voting in the second question. I don't know what Brent did. He's going to tell us in 1 second because I just posed that question to him. But I'm getting a lot of questions from people about what to do about the second question. And I think the important thing to do is don't vote for anyone that you don't share any values with. Because you are still casting an affirmative vote for somebody. And
I agree.
I'm not a strategic voter. I've made that very clear on this podcast. I'm not someone who casts votes in, you know, I'm not a vote blue no matter who person. I'm not a person who casts votes for people that I don't share at least some basic values with. And so for me, you know, the question of someone like, you know, Paffrath is a non-starter.
Right.
But I think that you can also decide that's a non-starter for you too if you don't share any of his values. And a piece of information from us to you is that if you are a Democrat and consider yourself a Democrat, or you consider yourself a once Democrat, you don't share much in terms of values with him. So he is in the category of people that you should not feel good about casting affirmative votes for, even right. if you're voting no. And you should vote no matter what you're going to do on the second question, because, like, honestly, that's what life is about right now. But, like, let's not start lowering our standards to that degree.
I agree. You know, we obviously talked a lot about Paffrath and his positions and how he's really to the right of at least one of the Republicans, and potentially more of the Republicans.
Right.
And I still agree that you should not vote for him. And then I feel like I've spent a good amount of maybe like the last couple weeks as people have sort of like started talking about voting for him, sort of like attempting to police that and attempting to talk people out of that. And I had a moment last night where I was with a group of people, and one of the people is not very active in, you know, sort of like knowing what's gone politically, but, you know, is a voter and kind of, she was asking, we started talking about it, and she started asking questions about how she'd seen it said both ways, whether you were supposed to vote on the second question or could you still vote on it if you vote no, and things like that. And so, and that is why, you know, and we hinted at this a little bit last week, that's why the Democratic Party is just being like, just vote no, and then fucking seal the envelope up and then just like don't think about it any longer because of that confusion. And that conversation made me realize that it's like it's less important to be policing people about their
on
vote
their
for Kevin
vote.
Paffrath than it is to just make sure everybody opens the damn thing and marks no and then does whatever pleases them at that
go
point,
with God,
right?
Do anything that
right.
you
right
that you feel
vote no
moved
on
to.
Question one and go with God on question two,
right? We're not here right. to tell you that there's a right choice, because I hate to tell you, but this whole thing is the wrong choice.
Right.
So there's no way to do it right. You know, I feel like you should go. If you are someone who is an inherently nervous person who feels that you have to cast a vote, just vote for anyone. Do anything. But just vote no. That's what you should do.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we're hearing a lot about concerns about turnout for this election, and that is because this is a stupid election and no one wants to vote in a stupid election, especially not a surprise stupid election, which this is. That said, this is one of the first stupid surprise elections that we've ever had in California, where everyone is just going to have a ballot in their mailbox.
That is what I have always said. And I'm like, if he figures out a way to lose this, then like he's really, I mean,
he's bad at running for office, if that's his.
Right. I mean, like, people didn't even have to show up to vote. People didn't have to take off work. People didn't have to do anything other than like, and there's one question on here that matters anyway. I mean, like, I've never voted so quickly in my entire life, right?
Certainly,
I mean,
not in your California life, where you've had to vote for 17 props that were all confusingly worded every single time you've gone to the ballot.
And that seems to be in the early stages here, because people have only had ballots for 2 weeks now, and there's still 2 more weeks to go before, 2.5 weeks, you know, 2 weeks from this Tuesday, before the actual election day. And the Democrats are far outnumbering Republicans at returning their ballots. And you would expect that to a degree, because we outnumber them like 2-1. But that's holding in how many people have returned their ballots, like that sort of 2-1 margin. And they're coming from more heavily populated areas that are like heavily Democratic. So we're starting to see like some of this being tracked. I think state officials release some numbers, and then there's some, you know, like private companies, I think, who are sort of like taking those numbers and then digging into them further as to like how many people are Democrats and where they came from and all of that stuff. But like, you know, 23% of the ballots have been already returned from San Francisco, 18% from Alameda, 17% from Santa Clara. That's, you know, the Bay Area, which are just like really heavily Democratic areas. I mean, all three of those counties are large and overwhelmingly Democratic, right? And when you look at some of the places that, like, are more heavily Republican, which are smaller areas anyway, right, there's much... They haven't been returned at that high a rate at all. You've got 11% of ballots in Riverside County, less than 10% in San Bernardino, only 7% in Fresno County, 1.9% of ballots in Kern County. And, like, I get that if the trends from the 2020 elections hold from the places that had huge mail-in ballots like this, that the Republicans are probably going to vote more so as it gets closer to election day and then also on election day. But certainly, I think that this maybe dispels some of the rumors that Democrats don't care about this, which I've always also thought was crazy. I mean, I think there's maybe some lower propensity voters that don't care about it, but the Democratic base here is so strong that even if we lose some of those low propensity voters, you still win elections here. It's why we win in off years. It's why we, you know,
I was going to say also, like, when you look at the number of Democratic voters versus other voters, like, you have to remember that a lot of Democrats are not registered as Democrats in California, but that doesn't mean that there's not a huge margin of Democratic voters in the state.
Right.
And then I also, you know, I think that the tendency to not cast a ballot probably increases the more complicated the ballot gets. But since the first question is the most important question and it's a yes or no question, I think you have less risk that people will look at all 400 props and be like, this is not for me. And totally. There's an easy answer here. And I think for the most part, people will be able to figure out what the correct easy answer is. And yeah. I also think that, like, remember, we're not going to get results on election day because we never do. So don't panic no matter what it says on election day. Just live your life for 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks later, start asking questions of yourself and your community, because you should not think to yourself about anything on the actual election day itself other than have I mailed in my ballot. But I think probably, you know, I would be surprised if Republicans were able to outnumber Democratic voters at the polls on the day. I think they maybe will be more equal. You know, maybe there'll be more in equal numbers, but there's going to have been already more Democrats that have already cast ballots. So
I think so.
Look, definitely vote. Don't leave anything to chance. It's always better to vote than not vote. You know, don't take any of this to mean that this is a sure thing. It's never a sure thing because of idiots. But that being said, I would also not be losing sleep over it yet. What I would lose sleep over is the fact that the current Democratic front runner is a Republican.
Yes.
That concerns me. And that, I think, is why it's nice that the second question is less important. Because when you think about the difference in ease between answering the first and second question, what you're looking at is the difference between voting in a primary where your vote really, really, really matters and voting in the general election where your vote generally does not matter as much. And this is why our primary votes are so fucking insane all the time.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Because 42 people shouldn't be on your ballot.
Yeah.
There should be fewer people, and they should be from the parties they claim to be from.
Right.
That's just a thought I've had.
Yeah, I agree.
To myself.
I forgot to mention 12% of the ballots overall have already been returned, which I think was higher than people thought was going to be the case already, too, considering that it's really, people have not had them that long. I mean, that was after sort of like a week and a half.
Who would not vote in this?
I know.
It's so easy. Just return. It's like, you just do it and you're done.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait in a line anywhere. Thank God. You don't need postage, right? You're just out there.
No.
Just mailing.
I don't think so. Let me look at the ballot. Yours, which I have.
By the way, before we leave this entirely, and Kevin Paffrath, there was a candidates forum this week where one of his big ideas was that he was going to build a water pipeline from here to the Mississippi River. So that's the kind of that we're.
Well, he's a man who understands geography, obviously. He's a man who understands geography. And Larry Elder just is a no-show at every attempt to make him clarify who he is and what he stands for.
Right. Well, he maybe pulled a gun on his ex-fiance because that's in the news here at this point.
That feels right. It feels on brand.
Totally right. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So, yeah, if you haven't heard from him or what he stands for and you just hear his name being mentioned as a specter of fear, but you have no idea why you're afraid of him, you'll never find out because you're never going to see him anywhere. He's not going to tell you what he stands for.
Although he's done a great job keeping himself alive because he is a conservative radio host and they're dropping like
flies. That's true. They certainly are. If there is one thing that puts you at even higher risk for COVID than just being an anti-masker who doesn't believe in the vaccine, it is hosting a radio show where you encourage people to do those behaviors.
I know. You know, a lot of scientists are out here talking about how the virus doesn't discriminate, but it might.
It might. It certainly seems
It might be coming specifically for people who have told other people not to get the vaccine.
Certainly, if they're doing it on the radio. I have a theory about this, which is that the general level of, like, fitness and health of the kind of person that does a conservative talk radio show might be the factor that is linking all of these deaths.
Yeah, they've got some pre-existing conditions that might be clear.
Conservative radio hosts, if anyone ever needed single-payer health care, it seems like conservative radio hosts are that demographic. They seem to have a very high rate of pre-existing condition. It also seems like being a conservative radio host might be a pre-existing condition. But I would say, listen, get the vaccine and wear a mask for sure. But if you are not doing either of those things, don't take that news to the radio. Just keep it.
No.
Keep it to yourself because also, it sounds like that's the one risk factor that could put you over the edge.
And also, if you are a person who is not wearing a mask or social distancing or taking the vaccine, also don't take a horse dewormer.
I mean, it shouldn't have to be said, but injecting bleach should not have had to be a warning that we had to give. Because you're also not supposed to do that, and yet that was something that people were trying. So look, I love the idea that we're the sheep for getting the vaccine, and yet people are rushing to get horse dewormers because they heard a rumor that it cures COVID. We know what cures COVID now. We've done it. We found it.
So good.
And it's free. You don't even have to pay for it. Horse dewormer, listen, is it cheaper than human dewormer? Yes, for sure. I think that's why everyone's doing it. But it's not as cheap as getting the vaccine because that is literally $0.
That's free. Yeah.
So I also feel like there's an article in the New York Times today that the headline is driving me bananas because it's about how Florida, you know, mismanaged all of this because Florida is like running out of oxygen and like everyone's in the hospital and like the whole state's dying. And it says that it's weird that a state, you know, it shows the limits of doubling down on vaccines because the state really doubled down on their vaccine strategy and yet nothing worked, but fails to acknowledge that the chief executive of the state is a conspiracy theorist who is spreading misinformation about both vaccines and COVID treatment all over the state. And that this is a state filled with the kind of people who would spawn a Florida man headline. So we have this is not an instructive case about anything having to do with anywhere that's not Florida. I would contend that we should take nothing from what we've learned from Florida and instead think Truly about what nothing. We've learned from 49 other states, because I don't know that this is the example of a place doubling down. If this is what it means to double down on vaccines, then like I have really misunderstood what's been going on out there. I know that there are a lot of old people there, so they doubled down on vaccines early on in the sense that people in the state were interested in getting the vaccine because they were all old. Yeah. I don't know that that became a public health strategy, though. So to claim it did feels a little bit iffy.
I agree.
What do I know?
Couldn't agree more.
What do I know?
By the way, have we made fun of the name of the Pfizer vaccine on this podcast yet?
We have not. And I think the reason we haven't is because we can't pronounce it.
Is it Comirnaty?
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 Comirnaty? Is it Comirnaty? I saw it broken down grammatically.
Oh, I know, because they took parts of like community.
17 words.
And it's like, well, you took the wrong parts of all of them.
Well, and didn't Moderna call itself like Spike Vaccine or Spike Vax or something?
Oh,
like
they I don't even know. Went for,
Moderna's name was silly in a very different way, but at least it's pronounceable. You're not going to get people to use the brand name of the vaccine if you call it Comirnaty. We don't know what it is. It's going to be called the Pfizer vaccine forever. And that
obviously
is because no one can pronounce the name of it. And if someone prescribed me Comirnaty, I would worry for sure that I was getting a herpes medication.
I was going to say, you'd become an anti-vaxxer.
Exactly. It feels like it's definitely a drug that you don't need that's being sold to you by an evil pharmaceutical company. And that is an unnecessary impression to create with the COVID vaccine, where a bunch of conspiracy theorists have also decided that's the case. Right. Call it something simple and easy, like healthy vax or something like that. I mean, use your heads. Think strategically. Yeah. And what's worse is someone probably got paid like $5 million to come up with that name. Those drug namers make a ton of money.
Sure.
And Brent and I have been behind naming things. We've done title searches on a variety of things. I've done them for films, but I also did one with Brent for an organization. And
That's right. I forgot about that.
You come up with a lot of gobbledygook in the process of doing a title search. That's
It's part of it.
That's part of the process.
A lot of them are made up words. I love a good made up word.
I mean, sure.
I mean,
if it's
pronounceable. I use them in promos all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But this, I think, was maybe a bridge too far. Because your made up word should not have four parts to it. It should maximum two. And both parts you can recognize. Nothing crazy like this.
Yeah.
People should be able to look at it and immediately know how it's said. In any case, this might be the last time you hear us talk about Comirnaty because we're never going to be able to say it with a straight face.
Right.
So you got in just in time.
Yeah.
Look, SCOTUS is evil and we don't know what to do about that because they're not elected. It's just, we're just being held hostage by a bunch of unelected beer loving Americans. And they decided this week that they were going to end the eviction moratorium along party lines. This was a party line decision.
6-3,
because they decided that the CDC exceeded its authority with their temporary ban on evictions. Now, keep in mind that their argument for doing this was based on the fact that the CDC was claiming this authority due to like a very old, like on the basis of a very old statute.
Yeah.
These are from the people that believe that the Constitution was like written by God and can never be changed.
Right, exactly. They're using the Bible, which is also very old.
Exactly.
To come up with a lot of their decisions.
Right.
So I would contend that, like, the CDC should have at it.
I mean, if they can find one single statute from history that backs up the decision to save lives, then that's what they should use to make a decision. And
I agree.
The Supreme Court certainly should not have anything to say about it, given the line of reasoning they're normally engaged in.
Yeah. And also, I think people forget this because I certainly had, as I was like, you know, pulling the information for this story. But Trump was the first person who used the CDC to do this, actually, because like it initially they passed that like initial COVID bill, or maybe it was even the second one. I can't remember, where they had an eviction moratorium that was in the law. And then it expired, I think, like in July or something of last year. And then Trump had the CDC use their authority based on this decades old long statute.
Yeah.
To extend it. So like, this is, if you're hearing from, you know, Republicans about like, you know, the CDC's overreach or whatever the hell it is, it's like, don't let them get away with that because like, it was,
well, don't come knocking on our door if you hear about that because,
well, right.
It wasn't Democrats that thought of this strategy in the first place.
No.
But also it feels like, look, they argue that Congress has to do it. And I, in most cases, would agree that law and policy should come from Congress. It should not come from executive authority. And while I know that we play a part in the overreach of executive authority, the overuse of executive authority over the last 20 years, because that is also something that Obama leaned on very heavily.
Totally.
I also would like to think that my members of Congress were like hitting the streets looking for a way to protect people from being evicted. But that also doesn't feel like it's happening. So I feel like, to some extent, we've been forced to rely on executive authority to save lives, literally, because Congress is not doing its job, which I actually think is something that we might agree with Trumpers on.
I agree. I mean, honestly, because we all knew this decision was coming, right? Like, the reason that Biden didn't extend it himself when it ran out, you know, a couple weeks ago was because he was like, I can't. And like everybody pretty much thought that this was coming. And at the time there was sort of, you remember like the last ditch effort supposedly that failed for the Democrats to like try and pass something at the 11th hour here. You would have hoped that what had happened over the last 2 weeks was that, knowing that this was going to happen at some point in the near future, right? Because they had already essentially said that he couldn't extend it again, that what Biden was essentially doing by extending it was buying them a little bit of time to maybe
fix
pass
this
something.
Problem.
The time to fix the problem. And it seems like he just allowed everybody 2 weeks to continue being in recess.
That's right. That's... So if you're wondering why it looks like 10 million more people are living in the streets in a month, it's because 10 million more people will be living in the streets in a month unless we do something to keep them off the streets.
Yep.
Which is a choice that we could make.
Well, and this is something, you know, and I think there's really an interesting part of this whole story here because the federal government, I think, to a degree, thinks that they have solved this in the sense that, like, they have delivered an amount of money to states that is meant to be for rent relief. And they're not necessarily wrong about that. But the problem is that it's not actually getting to anyone.
Yeah.
And I think that is actually going to be a story. It should be a takeaway from all of COVID, actually, because that has been a big issue with all of the funds that have been allotted for anything here, whether it was for PPP going to the wrong places or whether it was, you know, there's a ton of different programs that all are fully funded that aren't getting money at. You know, there's programs for artists who haven't been, or for actors who haven't been able to, stage actors who haven't been able to work. And like, I heard a story on NPR months ago about like how none of those, like, there's like, wasn't even a website set up for like any of them to like access any of that money. But there had literally been like billions of dollars set aside to like help all of these specific people. And I get that it's hard for state and local governments to just sort of like set up like ad hoc ways to get money out to people. But I do think that there is something to be said for like, you know, better and bigger government to like be able to actually sort of like have ways to distribute this money to people, because right now there's all this money out into the world, and the reason that's not being used is because people don't actually have access to it, or they have to fill out 17 documents to be able to get it.
I was gonna say, whatever, it's like, you know, when we were talking about the time tax, you know, you create structures that are inherently so complicated that individuals cannot access or cannot wade their way through them, and then you wonder why only large corporations get PPP money. And it's like, well, I would allow for some misuse of that funds if more of it was getting to the people that need it now.
If the reason that had happened was just because it was going everywhere.
Because we just sent it out to everyone. In the same way that I was like, don't means test the stimulus payments. Just send them to, you don't know what people's deal is right now. Send them to everyone. Collect the money back later if you need to. Rich people can afford to give you back $1,200. But like, don't use this as a moment to moralize at us about how we want to avoid waste and fraud. We actually don't have time to avoid waste and fraud right now. And it's actually more important that people have money now than it is to avoid waste and fraud. And so I feel like the way that we even conceive of social assistance programs, which is so obsessed with waste and fraud and avoiding waste and fraud, that we oftentimes create like incredibly complicated systems that no one can actually get through to access any of these, you know, programs, means that people who need the money now don't get it now. And then the only people who get it are people who can afford not to have it, basically.
Well, Well, and also, you know, I think that it also really speaks to one of the things that we've been advocating for, and a lot of people on the left have been advocating for, is to just make sure that everyone is also getting, whether it be a monthly payment of $1,500, or whether we took the tact to not let everybody fall off their unemployment and actually keep them attached to their jobs and just continue to pay their wages or whatever. You know, you wouldn't have to have a specific program that needed a website created for stage actors if the stage actors were just as regular humans already had money.
Exactly. Yeah. And these are all then solutions that... These problems have like simpler solutions than the ones that we create for them, because we also are aware from years of experience that our government cannot make a website. So creating programs that rely on the creation of a new website is something that should be a non-starter anyway. Like the great thing about the stimulus checks is that you didn't have to do anything to get them for the most part. You could do something if you didn't get one in error. But for the most part, all you had to do was be around and you would just get this money if you were a person who had ever interacted with the IRS. That is the, that should be the only, the height of obstacles that you have to reach in order to, if you are a stage actor, the IRS fucking knows that. They should have been able to find you. Like, if you are a person who lost your job, then the IRS should fucking be able to tell. because you're not making any money and they're not getting their, you know, withholdings from you. Like, yeah. It feels, this all feels like stuff that they could tell us instead of us having to tell them, is what right. I'm saying. If yeah, they're so worried about waste and fraud.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're just worried about no one actually getting yeah. access to money.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like 5% of the money that's been allotted for this specific purpose, the specific purpose being evictions, not stage actors. We've been talking a lot about stage actors of things here. We got sidetracked. We went on tangent, which is fine.
We're back.
But yeah, 5% of the something like $50 billion or something. And I also was reading something and I didn't pull it for here because it was not from this specific article. But some of the places that are actually doing better at getting this out are surprising, actually. Texas is doing a great job of getting this out. And some other rando places but I think it's probably because in a weird twist of fate, they are less in favor of government bureaucracy in Texas.
I was going to say they're less invested in creating the structures that means test these programs. If we are wondering why these programs are so complicated, it is not just Republicans aren't in favor of any of this. So they would rather the money be poorly spent so they can later be like, this was poorly spent. Look at how terrible Democrats are. Democrats are the ones creating all these fucking obstacles for the most part. They're the ones who believe in minuscule help, means-tested programs, in making sure everything is so fair that the people who actually need help can't actually get it
because
of fairness, quote unquote. These are systems that are created by Democrats. These are systems that, you know, are a legacy of welfare reform in the 90s. These are systems that, you know, we should not as progressives be in favor of, and yet all of our representatives are invested in them. So keep that in mind if you're wondering why money might be flowing more easily in certain states, it's probably because those states don't actually care where the money goes. And so they're doing the thing that you should do in an emergency and just getting it out. Because that is the thing. This is an emergency. Yeah. So in an emergency, you don't necessarily get that caught up in fairness. You get caught up in how do we get people help quickly?
Yep.
And you do your best to not recreate inequalities that already exist in society. But actually, by means testing, you're often reinforcing those inequalities. Ooh. That's the thing, is we're acting like we're doing this to prevent middle class people from taking all the money so poor people can't get it. But by creating a program designed for only poor people to get it, we often prevent everyone from getting it. And that feels like the catch-22 the Democratic Party finds itself in at this present hour.
Often.
I mean, I said the same thing about vaccine distribution, which was a controversial opinion at the time and now, which is that I thought they should have let it be a fucking free-for-all chaos thing. Because the people who were going to fight people to the death to get them should have been gotten in quickly. They're probably the ones who are out there spreading it to everyone. We should have given the COVID vaccine to whoever was willing to elbow 12 old ladies out of the way, because those people are fucking out there. And we should not have worried as much about the individual benefits of the vaccine, because the idea was to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible. So time really did matter. So getting the vaccines distributed quickly was actually more important than getting them to the right people in that context. Now, in a situation like the flu shot, sure, prioritize old people, prioritize the people that need it the most. I get why you would do that for a vaccine that's always around. But for a situation where you're trying to stave off an oncoming crisis, like a train is rolling towards you, who cares if the right people get it first? You only care that the right proportion of society gets it first. You want shots in arms as quickly as possible. It doesn't matter who those people are, because you're looking at it from a broad perspective. You don't care if those people individually lead fulfilling lives or not. That's unfortunately not your concern if you are a policymaker in a crisis. But in any case, that continues to be a controversial point of view. I get it. Socialism. Sorry about it.
In
final news, infrastructure, it's still infrastructure season.
Right. I noted last week, I realized, because as I was posting this on our website so you could listen to it, that I was writing the little blurb and I was like, you know, I have to tag all the things that we talked about in the episode. We didn't talk about infrastructure last week.
That's weird.
It was the first time in so long.
It was still infrastructure season.
Right. It was still there. It's not because nothing had happened. It was just other things.
Well, it was because nothing had happened that
they were gone.
Mattered.
Well, right. And Congress was
gone. A lot of jabs got traded back and forth. messaging happened, but messaging isn't action. Messaging is right. just messaging.
Yeah.
And so there was this impasse.
Was it last week that we didn't talk about it? No, I think it was last week we didn't talk about it. I don't remember. We talked about the mod squad at some point, but yeah. One of these last weeks we didn't talk about it.
We fortunately seem to have come to the end of having to listen to Josh Gottheimer say things in public.
For a while.
Which was really all I was looking forward to for a while. He'll be back.
Yeah, he will.
He won't let us.
They really stuck to their guns longer than I think a lot of people thought that they would, and certainly longer than made me comfortable. Because I think the everything that I was reading anyway was that, like, as those negotiations sort of like went by, like they would realize that like they needed all of the votes, and this was like the entire Biden agenda, and like the party would stay together, and like there wouldn't have to be any sort of like insane back and forth. But there did need to be insane back and forth that went on for quite some time, and there was an entire caucus call where people got very heated at these guys, and like it turned into a big deal. These idiots, these 8 or 9.
That's right.
Moderates.
The problem causers caucus.
Yeah, exactly. So they had to strike a deal. They didn't just cave. The deal, I think, I think it remains to be seen what will happen. Because essentially, you know, when we talked about them, their whole game was that they wanted immediate passage of the bipartisan deal that has already passed the Senate.
Right.
And Pelosi has always said that she's not going to vote on that until she gets this $3.5 trillion or whatever it is, because you've also got Kyrsten Sinema out there saying that she's not going to vote for $3.5 trillion because she's terrible. So who knows what that actual price tag will be. We'll call it $3.5 trillion for now because that's what it's at right now. But it was clear, and we said this on the podcast to us, that their plan was to vote on the bipartisan deal and then immediately turn around and vote no on the $3.5 trillion.
Obviously.
Because these are people who have already voted no on the COVID bill because they thought the price tag was too high, right? And we know that the majority in the House is slim right now. You can only afford to lose 3 or 4 votes. So they have enough people. They certainly could kill that larger $3.5 trillion deal. So what Pelosi had to do was essentially promise a date for a vote in the House of the bipartisan deal. So it's not for a while, and I think the plan is that the Senate will have already voted on the larger $3.5 trillion deal, and that they can do them at the same time per Pelosi's initial plan in the first place, and then Josh Gottheimer didn't really get much of anything other than a promise for a date. I think the concern is that, as we know, with infrastructure and with anything that's trying to get passed out of the Senate, they might
nothing
miss
will
that
ever
deadline.
Happen. Right.
Right? So then you're in a position where you've promised to vote on this bipartisan deal before the larger deal is done, and then these moderates can hose you because they'll vote no on the larger deal, which has been their plan all along.
Right. I was thinking about this, and I feel like if ever there was a group of people that I think Nancy Pelosi is up to the challenge of, it's these idiots. Now, look. I don't know what her actual agenda is, and that's usually my question, like how hard she wants to fight for the $3.5 trillion deal. And that, you know, that's the actual sort of like area of concern I would have. But I also think, like, can you imagine a group of people more primed for her to like eat their grandchildren or whatever she does than these moderates? Like, these are her people. She is also a moderate.
Right.
So she knows their game.
Yeah,
and she is also
game.
A scary person.
She knows all
person.
Their secrets. Right.
She knows their secrets, and she knows how to threaten them. And
yep.
So I feel like if I had my way, if I were her, I would just offer any date to them and then just not feel bad if I didn't make
well, that's
if I didn't
the other thing. She
the
could
deal.
Always renege on it. They would be pissed, obviously, and then could still end up voting no on the larger deal.
But like, their plan is to vote no anyway, so it's like she loses nothing in them being pissed other than them, the cat being out of the bag. And then that's then on their constituents to pressure them to do something different. But like, this feels like an area, the area that has kept her in power this long.
I agree. I feel like the way to convince them, and maybe this is naive of me, but like, I think this is important to pass because all of the things that are in that larger deal just are important. But it gives them, for the first time in I don't even know how long, something to run on in a midterm.
Right?
Or in any election, for that matter. I mean, how many elections have we gone by and asked what the Democrats were even trying to sell to people, right?
Exactly.
I mean, like, this is what you sell. I mean, it has so many things that help people's lives in very real ways. And you can also say that you did it by raising taxes on the wealthy, which is overwhelmingly, you know,
right.
Everybody's in favor. Republicans are in favor of that. I just, it's such a win electorally. Passing this is the only way that you have a prayer of keeping the House in 2022.
Yeah. It's like such a clear win, and you can pick and choose wins. First of all, I feel like these fools have forgotten how running for things works, because they often think that they will, A, somehow run in a miraculous way where there will be no attack ads on them. And you know, they're gonna prevent any attacks by not ever voting on anything.
Oh, yeah.
But B, they forget.
I don't want to vote on this because it has a tax increase, even though it's only for billionaires.
Like, well, you
but,
know
like,
what?
They're going to say when I raise taxes.
They're going to say you raise taxes anyway.
Anyway.
B, you're going to be able to answer that response by saying, here's what I got for you by doing that. That's the thing that you give up if you never take the vote. They still say that you raise taxes, but they just lie about it. And you have nothing to answer it with because you have done nothing for anyone. If you decide instead to use your head and vote on, you know, an actual policy that helps people, then when they say you raised our taxes, boo-hoo, we hate you, you can be like, here's what we got you. You can change the subject. You can't do that if you don't have a subject to change to.
Nope.
I don't know. I got a lot of questions about these fools.
I know.
One of them is from New Jersey.
Yeah.
That
Gottheimer, I think, is from New Jersey, right?
Gottheimer's from New Jersey, yeah. He almost got unseated. So let this be a lesson to New Jersey that you could have done something about this and you didn't.
I know.
But anyway, that's the news this week.
That's it.
You know, come back, buy my book.
Please.
If you have any pride at all.
Yeah. Just call your local bookstore and ask if they're carrying it.
Call your local bookstore and ask if they're carrying Some Kids Left Behind. Buy my book. And then, you know, just get out there and rabble rouse. That's what we're doing. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.